place, watch me steal the show. Higher ground, yeah, I'm rising fast. This is my moment, it's built to last. Keep the focus, keep the drive. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I am your host, Rebecca Whitman, helping you go from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. And I'm so happy you're here for today's episode because I have an amazing guest. Welcome to the show, Kimberly Crow.
I'm super excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I am just thrilled. Kimberly is just world renowned at helping people become amazing keynote speakers. And so many people on the show want to become better speakers. So this is going to be so valuable. So if you're listening to this and you can't take notes, don't worry about it. Come back later. You're going to want to take notes because she is going to be dropping some gems. So let me tell you about Kimberly. She is an award-winning international inspirational speaker, a TEDx speaker, an authority on how to speak and sell from stage. She is a best-selling author, a serial entrepreneur. She's host of a weekly online show called The Speaker's Playhouse. She's the founder of Entrepreneurs Rocket Fuel. Her mission is to make speaking on stages super accessible and super fun for entrepreneurs and coaches so that they can share their message with the world. She's the founder of Potapalooza, a one-of-a-kind event where I actually got to participate as one of the podcasters. And it's amazing because you can get booked on multiple podcasts on the same day. Imagine that, like just getting a bunch of content done and being like, oh, I appeared on 10 or 20 podcasts. So cool. So Kimberly, you have so many different businesses and income streams, and you're just a prolific, multi-passionate entrepreneur. Tell us your origin story. How did you get to be the Kimberly Crow that we know today?
Oh, that's a great question. So I probably did what a lot of your audience did. I went to school, I went to college, I graduated, and I got a good job in corporate. And I worked at that position for 17 years, and I climbed the corporate ladder like many do. I was at the end an executive director at a Fortune 1000 company, and I was really unhappy. I was there for about 17 years. 15 of them were really good. The last two, not so much. And I knew I was in a place that I was just unhappy. I just didn't want to keep doing this for the rest of our lives, right? I knew that there was more fun out there, more joy, and more things to do than just keep doing the same old, same old. So I decided that I would resign, and I successfully resigned. And I took about 2 years to have them stop hiring me back by accident. But then I was successful at quitting, and we left on very good terms. But then from there, I decided I would create an entrepreneurship and I would build a business to $1 million. And I think that's everybody's goal when they start as an entrepreneur. But lo and behold, I actually did that in about 18 months. I had built over $1 million in revenue.
Wow.
But I was very unhappy because I was basically doing the same thing I had done at corporate, but now I was doing it on my own. And now I wasn't just in golden handcuffs like I was at corporate, because I was making golden handcuffs is when you make a lot of money, so much money that it doesn't make sense to quit, but you're just there and stuck even if you're super unhappy. And so I was in golden handcuffs at corporate. Then finally, when I left, I had actually started this business and I realized I was in a golden jail cell. Mm. I had built myself. I had created a world in which I needed to continue to deliver on contracts that had been signed, to have employees that were counting on me for their paychecks, that I had delivery and payroll and all kinds of things that I had to do as an entrepreneur. But it just wasn't fun. And you can't just write a resignation letter and quit to your boss when it's your own company. So I was really, really stuck. And I left the house one day and did not go into work. I emailed my team that I wouldn't be there and they could cancel all my calls. And I decided to go out for a hike. And I went and hiked a mountain that's nearby our house. And somehow I thought the answer would be up there at the top. I don't know, a little guru with a a headband, and nope, it wasn't up there. So I had sort of a spiritual crisis about it. And I came back down and my son met me at the front door and he was 15 and a half. And he said, "Mom, I've got this problem." And I thought, great, somebody else's problem to focus on instead of my own. Have you ever felt that way?
Oh my God. Yes. That is like a big hack to get over your problems, is to ask someone how they're feeling. Cause you can like listen to them and not have to worry about yourself for a few minutes.
Exactly. So instead of all that churning, I was like, great, I can help somebody else. So I said, "What is it, sweetheart?" And he said, "Well, I'm 15 and a half and that's the wrong age for everything." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, we're going into summer and I'm too young to get a summer job," cause he was going to be 15 and a half the whole summer. "And I'm too old to go back to summer camp because that's boring and stupid now that I'm 15 and a half and I know everything." And I said, "Well, why don't we just create a business?" He was a little, you know, entrepreneurial kind of kid. And I said, "Why don't we create a business together around something you love doing? Just something that's fun." And his eyes got real big and he's like, "Can we do that?" I was like, "Sure, absolutely." So we decided to create, we put all of the things he was good at into Google, and he liked reading to kids at the library, and he was good on stage, and he did improv, and he could sing and do all these different things. So we put all that into the chat, into the Google before there was ChatGPT.
Yeah.
And it said, "Why don't you be an audiobook narrator?" And he got really excited. He's like, "Could we do that? Can we get paid to read books?" And I said, "Sure, I don't see why not." We ordered a bunch from Amazon and we started this audiobook business. And because we were having so much fun, Rebecca, we got more business than we could handle. We had so many people coming out of the woodwork being like, "Could you read our books? And we love your voice. And could you do this?" And so I was doing it, he was doing it. And it was just so much business. It kept us so busy and we were having so much fun that we decided teach a class to other people on how to become an audiobook voiceover artist. And that was super fun. And I thought, this is what it should feel like. It should feel like fun. It should feel like joy. It should feel like you're bubbling over with excitement to do it. Because if it's a grind and it's your own business, that's a golden jail cell, right? Yeah. You need it to be fun. We only have so many go-rounds on this planet. We yes. need it to be fun. And so that's when it started. And I ended up morphing into helping people get on stages because I love that, and helping people share their story and their messages. And I do summits and I do events and I love it. And I love every day. I travel full time now. I live a blessed life. I'm financially independent. And that's my origin story. I didn't mean to go on for so long, but that's
no, that's great. You have so many different businesses. What was the first one?
Yeah, the audiobook business. Well, the first one was actually in staffing. I was in the staffing industry and technical staffing, programmers, designers, drafters, and people like that. And we would put them to work at large companies. And so when I started my own business, I was doing more of that. But you know, sometimes just because you're good at something, you think you need to keep doing it. That's not true. It's really not. Just because we're good at something doesn't mean that that's what we should do for the rest of our life. And I knew that I did not want it to be on my tombstone. She was really good at staffing.
Yes.
I was pretty sure there was more to that, more to me than that.
Well, when you worked for corporate America, were you doing staffing? Is that what you said? Oh, okay. Wow.
I was really good at it. I just didn't love it anymore.
You didn't love it. So what was, I mean, you have such a portfolio, like Entrepreneur Rocket Fuel, the Speakers Playhouse, the Influencer Cruise. Like, how did all those businesses come about? Like, you don't have to go through the whole story, but like, what do you look for in starting a business? Like, is it a meeting with someone? Is it like a download, an idea? Like, you have such prolific a portfolio of businesses that help speakers, and kind of which one was the beginning of it all?
Well, I think the key to it all is that I know that entrepreneurship is actually a team sport. People think they have to do it all themselves, and I am exactly the opposite. I'm like, I love to create and come up with ideas, but the implementation of them takes effort. It takes work. And yeah. I think that's when people get into overwhelm, right? They're trying to do all the emails and they're trying to do the list building and they're trying to do all of the things themselves. And so right away, since I was in staffing, I was like, we need to find people that can help me get this stuff off my desk so I can create and enjoy and create more, but I can't do it all. And so how I created all these businesses, actually almost every single one of them is with somebody else. I created Entrepreneurs Rocket Fuel by myself, but then from there, and it was kind of with my son. And then from there, we created Speakers Playhouse, which was with a friend, Ginny Trask. We just collaborated and I was like, let's do this. And then I built Potapalooza with a friend, Michelle Abraham. I built Keynoting Camp with a friend, Frank King. And then I built out another event called the Influencers Cruise with Michelle again. And when you have other people to like collaborate with and play with, then life becomes a lot more fun.
And you're in the spirit of collaboration over competition, which is an abundance mentality. You're not like, oh, well, if I create a business with this person, then I'm only going to get half the profit.
Half of $1 million is still $500,000. I'll take it, right?
Half of $1 million is better than 100% of $0.
Exactly. So yeah, no, I don't believe that there's much competition out there. We are all building something a little bit different. And, you know, the one that I always think of is book publishing companies. There's about 100,000 book publishing companies out there. There's a lot, right? But they're all a little bit different. You want to work with the people that you like. You want to work with a book publishing company that has the style and the personality that's really floats your boat if you're going to publish a book. And people, everybody has opinions out there about what that is. And some people like a by the numbers kind of thing. And other people like sort of a free flowing kind of thing. There are people who love the spirituality aspect and people who are like, nope, I'm all business. So I think there's enough for everybody out there. And there's really no competition that's worth talking about.
And what is your son doing now?
He actually is, he works at a corporation, and he's starting to, build out, duplexes and quadplexes. So, he's going to be a little entrepreneur on his own.
Yeah. Real estate is a great way to get wealthy.
Yeah. I have, 7 rental properties that help me fund my travel full-time lifestyle.
Nice.
It is, having a portfolio and a diverse background, and not trying to only do one thing and make only that work, I think is a big key to financial success.
I totally agree. I'm all about creating multiple streams of income. And I'm also in the real estate game. So I could not agree with you more. Let's talk about keynoting, because that is something that you're so great at teaching. What are some aspects of what makes a great keynote?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you where some mistakes are. Yes. A lot of people want to keynote and they will say, what do they need? What's hot right now for keynoters? I will talk about that. And that is the least likely way that you will get hired as a keynote speaker. Keynote speakers are experts in one niche and they're known for one thing, usually one talk. Not even like, oh, I teach on spirituality, right? They've got to, it's really a niche market area. And you get very good at one particular talk and one particular audience. And then you can have a second or third audience that also, that would relate to. Now, those audiences also are very niche. So it's not like you speak to women, because that's over 50% of the population. You need to speak to, like women HR professionals and teaching them something very specific to their jobs. And when you do that, then you become the go-to person to hire for that particular aspect. Now, if you're Tony Robbins or you're Brendon Burchard or you're a former US president, then right. You can command large chunks of income and speak on a variety of different subjects because they already know you and your background. And they're going to come to have you talk about something specific anyway. But when you are starting out, you need to be the person who is an expert at this. And I will tell you that my partner in keynoting camp, he is the mental health comedian. He speaks on, he does comedy, but he's done over 1,000 keynotes on suicide prevention, which is sort of a dark subject, but he's very, very niche. So he helps very specific groups of people. In fact, building construction is one of the highest, the places with the highest levels of suicide. And so he went specifically after that. He built out an entire website just for that group. And he is known very well in the construction industry for speaking on the topic of suicide prevention. And how
I'm going to stop you right there. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're going to cut to a quick commercial break.
Let's do it.
When we come back, we are going to talk about how to sell from the stage. So I know a lot of people starting out, they can't command, you know, big fees for their keynote, but they can sell from the stage. And I know that's something that you are really great at teaching. So everybody, this is Rebecca Whitman. I am your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show, taking you from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. I'm with Kimberly Crow, an incredible speaker, mentor, keynoter, author. She is going to talk about how to sell from the stage. So do not go anywhere. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I'm here with Kimberly Crow, incredible coach, speaker, mentor, multi-passionate entrepreneur. I just found out real estate mogul. She is going to talk about how to actually sell from the stage. So before you can actually get paid for a big keynote, you can sell a product or a good or a service from the stage. And Kimberly is going to teach us how. I'm so excited for this segment. Tell us, Kimberly, how do we sell from the stage?
Oh, that's a great question. The first thing you got to do is have a call to action. Every single talk you ever give from this point forward should have a deliberate call to action. What is a call to action? It could be buy my stuff, right? It could be I have this great thing that you should buy, but it can also be grab my downloadable or meet me in the back of the room and we can have a chat or go to my website or let's book a call. But every single talk needs to have some sort of call to action. Now, if you're on a keynote, you may not be able to bring somebody to your program, product, or service, or even offer a downloadable. But even a keynote needs to have a call to action. So on Frank King's keynote, he will say, this is how you can prevent a suicide in the future. If you hear this, then do this, this, and this. So it is the marching orders for everybody at the end of your talk. So you're going to ask yourself before you get on any mic going forward, three things. Number one, what do I want my audience to learn by the end of this talk? What do I want my audience to learn by the end of this talk? Number two, what do I want my audience to do at the end of this talk? What do I want my audience to do at the end of this talk? What should they take action on? And number three, how do I want my audience to feel at the end of this talk? Do I want them to feel hopeful or empowered or confident or really angry about something so they'll actually take action and do a difference? What do I want them to feel at the end of this talk? And when you get onto the mic, knowing those three things, you will know where you're starting and where you're landing. So you want to be sure that you have those three things in mind before you get on the mic. And that really is the secret to being able to sell from stage. So sell, meaning have people take action at the end of your talk.
How long is a typical keynote?
It can be anywhere from 45 minutes to long ones now are about 90 minutes. They usually aren't like that. They weren't like that in the past. You could have a keynoter speak for 2 hours or whatever. But now we have short attention span theater. We're all scrolling like this because we can't like hang on long enough to a thought. So really 45 minutes can be a keynote and a very effective one.
How important is it to use slides or videos during a keynote?
I'm going to go with it depends. I'm not a fan of slides. In fact, I resist them whenever I can. I want my audience to connect with me as opposed to my PowerPoint, right? Mm-hmm. And I think death by PowerPoint is a terrible way to die.
Death by PowerPoint? That is so funny.
Yep. If you have a PowerPoint presentation, oftentimes the keynote speaker is showing that they are hiding behind a keynote presentation because they'll tell you, oh, that's just so I can keep track of where I need to go next. And while that's true, it also outs you as not a very strong keynoter because you really need to know your own content. There's a gentleman that is a great public speaking teacher. His name is Bill Walsh. And he says, if you can't give your talk with a Sharpie and a 3M pad, then you do not know it well enough. Mm. And I love that idea, right? If you see a presentation by Brendan Burchard, he will have a whiteboard behind him and he'll be writing it out while he goes. Or if you see a presentation live with Brendan, he might have that whiteboard over there. But when he has a PowerPoint up, it'll either be the video of him speaking or it will be like one or two words and with an orange background. That's it. It's not full of all kinds of content. One thing that you'll notice right away now that I've told you this is when you go to an event and somebody puts up a lot of content, everybody pulls out their phones and then they unlock those.
Yeah.
And take a picture of it and they take another picture of it. Nobody's paying attention to them, right? They're all gone.
They're not looking at the speaker. They're looking at the content. So it's
and
like,
they're not listening anymore. They're like, oh, I got to grab this because I might miss it.
And it's like the speaker's content upstages them and their message.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, what about stage fright? Do you have any advice for new speakers when they get stage fright?
Absolutely. And stage fright is a real thing. Now, I'm just going to say that out of the gate. You know, a lot of people will tell you to ignore it. A lot of people will tell you to imagine the audience in their underwear. I can't imagine anything that would make me more nervous than having a whole bunch of people in their underwear sitting in front of me, right? I would be very uncomfortable. So I think that's probably really bad advice. But I do have some advice for people who get very nervous beforehand. First off, know those three things before you get on any stage, right? Second, of course, breathing is very powerful. Jumping up and down can release a lot of energy. So behind stage, you will know that a lot of powerful keynote speakers are releasing energy by moving their body a lot behind stage. So those are some techniques you can use. But here's the real key ones. So your body is having a reaction. It's real. You can't pretend it doesn't exist. So instead of pretending that you're not nervous, I would say embrace the actual symptoms. They're happening. Your ears might be ringing. Your head might be spinning. Your throat might be closing up. Your breathing might be faster. Your stomach may be doing flip-flops. And in all that, that's real things that are happening. So if I tell you, oh, just ignore that, Rebecca, you'll be fine. Like it just gets worse, right? Your body needs to, you need to acknowledge that your body is having these symptoms. But here's the interesting piece. Your body going through that experience of nervousness is the exact same feelings and the exact same chemicals pumping through your brain as excitement.
Yes.
Think of when you get on a roller coaster, your stomach may be doing flip-flops, your breathing may be faster, your ears may be ringing, your head may be spinning. Those are real feelings that you feel, and it's the same feelings as nervousness. So the next time you get on stage, instead of saying, I'm so nervous to get on stage, you can say, I'm so excited to get on stage, and your brain will not know the difference.
I call it nerve-sighted because fear and excitement are the same exact emotion. It's just one is predicting a negative outcome, and the other one is predicting a positive outcome.
Well said.
What about if somebody's on stage and they go blank?
That happens. It's the one thing that you need to know is that your audience doesn't know where you're going to go next. They don't have the script in front of them. And so they don't know that you've lost your place. You just need to teach some other piece of your material and then come back and swing around to it if you want. If you really do go blank, then give yourself a minute. Take a drink of water or go to the side or grab your notes from the side or whatever. That happens on longer talks for speakers all the time. And even if you're doing a TEDx, which is probably the most intimidating talk you can give for some people, if you do a TEDx, the people that are there in the audience are not your entire audience. The people who are the most important audience are the ones who are going to watch the video after. And that video can be edited with that part cut out where you got stuck. And so don't panic. What feels to you like 5 minutes is probably less than 20 seconds of just freezing. And then keep in mind that if you're teaching a lot of material, let's say you're doing a 3-day event and you just don't know where you're going next, maybe it's because somebody raised their hand and asked a question. And when you went off to teach that question, you lost your place. I saw a really amazing speaker who actually was pitching a program on becoming a public speaker. She was incredible on stage. Somebody asked a question, she got off track, and she did what speakers do. You might notice this now. They go off to the left, the stage left. She went off to stage left and taught over here. It means she's off track, and that's okay. But when you turn around, you realize, I need to be over there, right? And so it happens that she had lost her place. So she's way over on stage left, and she's like, okay, what was I talking about before? And everybody was rapt because she was giving a great answer. Somebody in the front said, I think you were talking about this. And she goes, right. And then she turns this way and she starts talking again, and she's on it. The good news to learn from that, the message to take from that, is that your audience wants you to succeed.
Yes, that's a great point.
Nobody is in the audience because they came to listen to Rebecca and Kimberly, and they hope Rebecca or Kimberly lands on her ass. Nobody is doing that, right? They all are there because they want to learn from you. They want the information that you're there to share. So all of your audience is actually probably a warm audience. Unless maybe you're speaking in a boardroom and people are getting told what to do from you. And I've done that as well. And still, it can be a warm audience if you play it right.
So what is your biggest horror story of a speech? I know Brendan Burchard tells one where he throws up the second he gets backstage.
I love that story.
It's a great story. What is your horror story of being a public speaker or coach or any of it?
Yeah, I will tell you that the TEDx, actually, I've never had a panic attack, but I was the closest I'd ever been before my TEDx. I was literally laying down behind the stage, breathing and moving and, you know, taking deep breaths, trying to get myself to not be spinning. And so that was very, very stressful. And on my TEDx, I actually did have two paragraphs that were out of order. And I just knew that I didn't know what the next one was. So I went to the one after that. And then I came back around to it. Nobody would know, but that does happen from time to time.
What do you mean out of order? You memorized it?
On a TEDx, you have to memorize your talk. Yep.
So you can't just channel in free flow.
No, you cannot. In fact, they will give you, they'll go through your script word by word and alter words for you in the months beforehand, which is very, very difficult because you actually have to re-memorize with the new words. It can be very, very difficult. But that wasn't my worst story. My worst story is actually a live event that I taught at on Zoom. And during the live event, I taught on the four types of stages every entrepreneur should get on and how to profit from each one. And somebody raised their hand during the talk, and her question was, hey, I'm not ready to speak yet, which always gets me going because we've all been ready to speak since about 3.
Yeah.
I'm ready to deliver my answer to that. And she says, because I don't have a one sheet yet. Well, I was just astounded that she said that. I didn't know she was going to go there. And I said, you don't need a one sheet to speak. I've been on over 5,000 stages and I've never given a speaker book or a one sheet ever. Just get out there. Don't hold yourself back. And I was off and running with my lecture. She finished and I was like, did that answer your question? She was like, yes, that was great. Thank you so much. And then we went on. What I did not realize is that in the chat, people were asking, what's a one sheet? I don't know what a one sheet is. Is she going to tell us what a one sheet is? I had just launched as if everybody knew. And that happens to speakers all the time. They know their material so well that they don't realize that the audience might be getting left behind. So that is what I call the black and blue rule. You have to make sure that you go back and save the chat for all of your live talks. If you speak on a podcast, you should go back and read the comments 6 weeks later and see what they're commenting on. This is your learning material. So that the next time I ever gave that talk, I would teach that a one sheet is basically a two-sided piece of paper, a speaker resume that you would hand to or mail to a speaker booker with your name, your contact information, your talk titles, testimonials, and learning points from your talk. So now every time I say the word one sheet, I always teach what it is.
Well, I wouldn't beat yourself up too much for that one, because if you're giving a Zoom and there's a lot of people and you're giving a talk, do you also have to keep up with the comments?
Well, it's important that you respond to comments as much as possible. You want to engage your audience and keep them engaged with you. That chat, those people who are typing on that are grabbing the chat are the people who are going to take action on your talk. You take action at the end of your talk. So you want them as engaged as possible, and you do want to answer those questions. When you're doing an interview style, your host should be bringing those questions to you. And as a rule, as a speaker, I always save my chat at the end, and then I'll go back and answer questions if we missed anything. But yeah, ideally, if you're doing interview style, you should be focused on the interviewer rather than the chat. But sometimes you'll just see something come through and you'll want to grab that.
Amazing. Well, I love your life motto. If it's not fun, it's not worth doing. We are going to cut to a quick commercial. When we come back, we're going to explore this life motto. If it's not fun, it's not worth doing. You're listening to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show, hosted by me, Rebecca Whitman, where my mission is to help you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. We have Kimberly Crow, an expert speaker, multi-passionate entrepreneur, author. She's just an amazing coach. She's just putting it all out there. So make sure you come back in a couple minutes. Welcome back, everyone. My name's Rebecca Whitman. You are listening to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. We have an awesome guest today, Kimberly Crow. Let's talk about your life motto. I like to say the more fun you have, the more money you make. Your motto is, if it's not fun, it's not worth doing. What does that mean to you? And how is that an amazing life view?
Well, I love your motto. That sounds really good. And I do believe that's true. I think when we show up as the person we are meant to be, instead of trying to be the same as somebody else that's making money, I think that doors open for us. I'll share with you one that I do. I have a lot of different events, a lot of different offerings. From those offerings, the model is to sell a high ticket program from those events, right? That's just the model that's out there today as we're doing this podcast recording. It's bring people to an event and then pitch them some sort of coaching program or product or service. And that's what I was taught in the early stages of this. They were like, oh, you can teach people how to launch a business, or you can teach people how to sell a business, or you can teach people all these different things. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. And then they said it was a year-long program. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And they said, well, that's where all the money is. And I was like, yeah, but I don't want to. And my mentor was like devastated, because he said, you're doing all of the things that lead up to it. You're just not, you can't monetize unless you have this big program at the end. And I think no is a complete sentence, and we really need to know what we want. And for me, that was a no. It was just, I'm not going to sell a year-long coaching program that promises the moon to speakers who are may or may not follow my process. I just didn't want to do it. And so I decided that when I was doing things, if it just didn't feel right intuitively, I just was going to say no. And since then, I've had this really unique business created where I have a lot of free events. I have a lot of opportunities to speak. I have a lot of stages. I have a lot of paid events. I speak on other people's stages. I get paid to speak. I do speak to sell. I do all of these different things. And each one of them is sort of a gut check. Like, is this going to be fun? Is it going to be joyful for me? And from that perspective, I've had the opportunity to become independently wealthy. I spend my summers sort of abroad. I travel full time. My daughter and my son and I went on a hike across Spain. I've done it twice now, where you walk all the way across Spain, one direction or another.
What's that called? Camino something?
Camino del Santiago.
Yes, Camino del Santiago. I've heard about that.
And then we did the Portuguese, which is sort of the one that goes north up the West Coast. Wow. So I've done it a couple of times. But while I'm walking, I have a backpack on my back. I'm with my kids. I'm out in this gorgeous scenery. And my phone will pop off and it'll be like, oh, somebody bought your thing. Oh, somebody else bought your other little thing. And there's somebody. And there's a million ways to make $1 million. It doesn't have to be that you sell high end, but it absolutely can be. It doesn't have to be that you do events, but it absolutely can be. And so make sure that what you're doing resonates with who you are. If you love speaking, let's get you on the mic. If you love doing, you know, books, let's create a bazillion books. Whatever it is that you love doing, that will shine through. There's a great quote out there by Howard Thurman. Howard was, Mr. Howard Thurman was a mentor to Martin Luther King Jr. Imagine that. So he had this quote that said, "Do not ask what the world needs. Ask what lights you up." Mm. Because what this world needs is more people who are lit up.
Yes. Well, I consider you lit up. So how do you do it? Like, how do you do time management with being a mom, owning real estate, traveling? You have all these different events, cruises, speaker events, summits. Like, how do you do time management? That's what I want to know.
Well, that's a great question. And actually, I'm a big fan of Google Calendar. And making sure that everything has time for it. I have multiple calendars. I actually have a promotional calendar because if you've got a lot of different events, you got to know when you're posting on each one. And if you're giving affiliates their promotions, when you're doing that. So I'm a big fan of Google Calendar and making sure that you track that stuff. You got to block time to be able to not only do the event, but plan for the event, have partnership meetings before the event, do trainings for the people who are participating in the event, do trainings for people who are speaking at the event, and just make sure that you get all of that on your calendar. It's a team sport, ladies and gentlemen. You cannot do this alone. It's just too much. The overwhelm is what makes speakers and entrepreneurs unsuccessful, being like, I cannot do it all. I don't have any more time. If I have time to go for a month to walk across Spain and still build $1 million business, you guys just need to figure out like what you need to offload. You got to get on, and I'll tell you this, this is just a little more teaching. You got to get on the road to joy. Get on the road to joy. R-O-A-D is an acronym. R stands for relish. If you relish something, if you love doing it, if you love getting on stages, if you love writing books, if you love writing content, if you love crafting emails, if you love creating, that's the stuff you should be doing. R is for relish. O is for outsource. Pay somebody else to do it. I don't do my own taxes. You probably don't either. No. That's something we should pay somebody else to do because we don't like doing it. But the person doing our taxes loves it. They're good at it. They enjoy it, right? They should be doing our taxes. If you don't love doing like house cleaning, you can hire a house cleaner or a pool cleaner or whatever, right? Like you hire that stuff out. What makes you think you can hire stuff out for your business? A is for automate. I send my email, my entire email list, an email every single day. I create those emails, but I do not email them out individually to my entire list. That is all automated, right? And if you do things, you probably automate stuff already. If you don't like vacuuming your house, buy a Roomba. Automate,
right? Exactly.
So much you can automate. It's just like that should just be taken off your plate. If you don't relish it, if you don't love it, get it off your plate. And D, R-O-A-D, the D stands for delete. Delete it. If you cannot love it, if you cannot outsource it, if you cannot automate it, maybe it just needs to be deleted. And I'll give you a quick example of that too. When I had small children, I was married with two small little kids, I would send a physical Christmas card to everybody in our family who celebrated Christmas. And I would take care to write all little special personal messages. And I did all this stuff. And every year I'd send out 50 to 75 cards to people. And it was great. And people loved them. And it was wonderful. Until one day I was like, this is a pain. Like this, I don't love doing this anymore. And I didn't. I just said no. No is a complete sentence. So I just said, I'm not going to do that this year. I didn't buy the cards. I didn't buy this postage. I didn't do any of it. Not one person reached out and said, oh, I missed the card. How come you didn't send it to me? Not one person missed it, right? So maybe some of your stuff, if you don't love it anymore, just needs to be deleted.
I love that. And what was your TED Talk about?
Actually, your TED Talk cannot be about anything that's your business. You can't do any sell. And you also can't get paid to do it. So my TEDx was actually about a subject I'm very passionate about, which is confirmation bias, believing the same stuff you've always believed and gathering evidence to prove that it's true and refusing to see evidence to prove that it's false. Every argument that we have with our spouse or our partner or our kids or whatever, there's argument and evidence on both sides. We just like to ignore the evidence on the other side. And so it was a big talk about being open to the possibility that we were wrong about something and bringing in that evidence to the contrary.
Are you still married?
No, but my husband, my ex-husband and I are very good friends. We had an extremely good marriage for about 30 years. Which ended quite naturally. It wasn't easy to go through the divorce. It was difficult for both of us and, of course, our children as well. But now we are extremely good friends and it just is the best for both of us.
That confirmation bias kind of reminds me when couples fight. People get so locked into their narrative and they're just not willing to see it another way.
Absolutely. And we all are. It's by our very nature that we want to prove ourselves right. And it's in every aspect of our life, right? That I'm a good employee, that I'm a good Christian or a good spiritual person, or I'm doing good in the world, or I'm a good parent, or I'm a good daughter. All of those things we want to believe and we want to gather evidence to prove that that's true. Sometimes we get into parts of us, which is imposter syndrome, and we gather evidence to tell us how bad we are and stuff. But those beliefs that we hold, we continue to find evidence to reinforce the beliefs we already have. That was my TEDx.
That is a great, I want to hear that. Definitely. We should link that to the show. So we're going to end with a really potent question. I've asked other speakers this on the show. I feel like any good entrepreneur has to get great at two skill sets, asking open-ended questions to get people talking. And the other one is becoming a great storyteller. What, in your opinion, are some great aspects to storytelling? Like, do you have a structure of how you tell a story from stage, or what is your teaching on that?
Yeah, actually, it's kind of a diagram that we have, and maybe I can give you the diagram to put the notes as well. But basically, you start at the medium, so in between the top here and the bottom here, right? You're starting out as just normal human, and that is an easily identifiable person, right, that I can identify with. A woman over 50 who is having challenges loving her business, right? Mm-hmm. And then you tell that part of the story, and then you say, until one day, and then something happens, boom, you get miserable, right? Mm-hmm. So that is the falling action, right? And then you talk about your time and trial. So time and trial is a little bit bumpy like this.
On the bottom, yeah.
It's a little bumpy like this. So it's like, I tried this and it didn't work. And then I tried this and it didn't work. And then I tried this and it didn't work. And then you find your elixir or your cure. And the elixir or cure is one of the things that you tried. This is your program, product, or service, right? And then I realized that I needed to get on stages. And when I got on stages, all of a sudden, everything got better. And now you're up here. So that's the storytelling methodology.
That is really, really good. And that's is that what happened to you when you figured out that your happy place was being on stages?
Yeah.
So how did you go from just being on stages by yourself to throwing all these fun events? Like, let's talk about some of your events, like the Speakers Playhouse and the Influencer Cruise and all these, because I feel like you're a great speaker, but you're like a curator. You're like me. I love to throw international luxury wellness retreats because I like curating an event and giving people an experience is my happy place. So when did you realize that you were a great curator of experiences and events? Potapalooza, that was an experience.
Well, if it's not fun, it's not worth doing. So it's all going to be, as you put it, an experience. And I love the way you phrased that. That's so beautiful. And yes, I don't think I ever realized I was really great at that. Although I just follow what I really enjoy doing. And I'm not afraid to just not do it anymore. When we started Speakers Playhouse, my partner and I agreed, like, let's do this until it's not fun anymore. And then we'll just stop doing it.
Tell my audience what the Speakers Playhouse is.
Oh, it's a weekly networking event. It's totally free. You can go to Speakers Playhouse any week on a Thursday from 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific. And it's an opportunity to find stages and speaking opportunities or to find guests. It's gamified. It is not your father's networking event. It is super fun, super fast paced, and very high energy. That said, we started creating it and we were having a lot of fun creating it. And we did it for many weeks and we kept saying, all right, but this is ever not fun. We're just going to not do it anymore. That was 4 years ago. We just celebrated our 4th year anniversary doing it. And we were just talking about like, remember when we started, we would say we quit doing it if it ever wasn't fun. And it just stayed fun. We just kept pouring into it and people were pouring into us. It was really, really great. I think creating something that other people really love and get excitement out of is what lights me up. So if I can put on an event and other people are like, that was so fun, my job here is done.
Oh my God. Well, you are so inspirational. I've absolutely loved our conversation. I could talk to you all day. How can my audience stay in touch with you, find you online? What upcoming events do you have?
Absolutely. So you mentioned a couple of them. Potapalooza, we do twice a year. The next one, as of the recording of this podcast, is June 18th, 2025. But we do have them about twice a year. We also have keynoting camp for those of you who want to create a bookable, billable $5,000 keynote talk in a 4-day event. And then we also have the Influencers Cruise. And the Influencers Cruise is an opportunity to become an international inspirational public speaker because you actually speak on the ship. So the one that we're doing this year is actually a nine-day, eight-night cruise in the Western Caribbean. It's going to be a lot of fun. We have programming during the at-sea days. And then on port days, you go and have fun.
And when is the Influencers Cruise and when is Keynote Camp?
So the Influencers Cruise is March 29th. That's 2 weeks from the time we're recording this, so I don't know when that will actually come out. March 29th, 2025. We will have another one in April of 2026. So stay tuned. You can go to Keynoting Camp is with 2 Ks. So it's keynotingcamp.com and then influencerscruise.com will get you to the information there. And then Potapalooza we have twice a year as well. That's online. So it's a virtual event, 1-day event where podcasters and speakers connect and our VIPs, as Rebecca said, actually record content in our podatorium during the event. So they walk away with up to five podcasts recorded in a single day.
So much fun. I'm excited to be a podcaster at the next one. Thank you so much, Kimberly, for being on the show. Thank you so much, listeners. You might be listening on the radio, on a podcast platform, on YouTube. Listening to this show means so much to me, but don't just listen, spread the word, share this episode with a friend and share the message and the mission that you don't have to be successful and burned out. You can be balanced, beautiful and abundant. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetized. Bye everyone.